Hello and welcome to Celebrating Cinema. I'm your host, Laura Gommans, and I'm here with Lab 111's head of cinema, Tom Ohms.
Hello there.
And also our producer, Elliot Bloom.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening.
Wow, for all, you got them all. The 50th anniversary of Spielberg's Jaws is coming up, and in light of that, we are going to be looking at some of the great creature features in cinema history. But first, let me tell you about some cool things that are going on at Lab 111 in Amsterdam in the upcoming weeks. So starting in September, we have a huge program on Agnes Varda, so you can see where Wes Anderson got all his quirky ideas. But we also have a ton of Miyazaki, a ton of Kurosawa, a bunch of sing-alongs like Dirty Dancing, Grease, and Mamma Mia. There's truly something for everyone, so check out our full program at lab111.nl. If you happen to enjoy this podcast, leaving us a rating and a review really helps us to keep it going. And it would mean a lot to us if you could just go into your app and tap whatever star rating your heart tells you to give. Before we get into the creature features, Tom, what have you been watching lately?
What was the last thing that I watched? Oh, yeah. John Carpenter's In the Mouth of Madness.
Oh, amazing.
Well.
Fun.
Fun. Yeah, it's way too long. So the idea
is,
Sam Neill, who finds out that he's an insurance agent who needs to find out what's happening with people who get crazy by reading books by a guy called Sutter Kane, and then he finds out that he's actually living in the book or something.
I watched this when I was incredibly stoned out of my mind. I remember really enjoying it, but I don't remember anything about it.
I'm making a public service announcement for in the cinema to have people not use their phone and not whisper or kick seats, throw stuff on the floor, etc. So I'm putting together this huge compilation of people being in the cinema, and the movie, spoiler, ends with him sitting in the cinema and watching himself in the filmed version of the book that he's actually living.
Wow. So.
Meta!
Really freak people out there, you know? Just make sure that before every movie starts, people are like, am I in is what? And then they won't kick the seats and talk, I guess.
Hopefully.
The last thing I technically watched was Grease.
Yeah, oh yeah, tell us about this.
Our team here at Lab 111 do a sing-along screening at Lowlands every year. And this year it was Grease, and we made a big literal song and dance of it because we did the entirety of Grease. We were, I think, 12 people. Everyone got like a character to play. We had the T-Birds, we had the Pink Ladies, and we just had a huge party at Lowlands, and it was an amazing success. I
don't know what, it was huge.
Bragging sounds weird, but it was really, really, it was really, really fun because you were there. We did Spice World, right?
We've been doing this now for 6 years, I think, or something. So we've done Rocky Horror Picture Show. We've done Grease before. Mm-hmm. We've done Spice World and
Barbie.
And I'm forgetting one, I think. Anyway, this time around I wasn't there. I was really, really happy just wake up on Saturday and have a hangover.
You know, and that's part of your personal development, and I get that. It was really hard for me as, depending on where you are in this life, an old person to be in a tent and wake up in a tent. It was hard for me, I have to say, but it was all worth it because we had so much fun. And we were also up against Queens of the Stone Age, which was tough because I technically wanted to see them, kind of, but I had stuff to do because I was one of the T-Birds. But it was really cool that so many people came out to watch Grease. There was a huge line outside the theater of people who couldn't even get in. So super exciting. Hopefully catch us next year at Lowlands.
Yeah, and if you missed any of Grease sing-along that we've done, there's still one left on the August 30th, I believe.
Jaws. So, hey, didn't mean to scare you there. Jaws is back in theaters this summer because it's turning 50 years old. I'm personally really excited because I love a shark movie and Jaws probably most of all.
I don't think you appreciate the gut reaction people have to these things. You yell barracuda. You're racist, huh? You yell shark. We've got a panic on our hands on the 4th of July.
Tom, what's so special about Jaws?
It's generally seen as the summer blockbuster, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the one that, for all intents and purposes, sort of came up with the idea that you could actually release something in the summer and people would go to it in droves. What year is it? Sorry, it's stupid because it's an anniversary year and I should know this.
It's 70. Wait, why?
Yeah, it's 76.
It has to be.
Oh, sorry, it's 75. Yeah,
yeah, but exactly. I also have 76 in my head, but it's the 50 that... Wow. Time and space. It's so confusing.
So, released in 75, it's... Well, it is Steven Spielberg's breakthrough film, right? So he made Jewel before that, which is kind of funny because that's kind of a creature feature,
but it's a truck.
But it's a truck.
It's so it's, cool.
Yeah, it's a really fun movie. It's really hard to see now these days, but I remember it being on television back in the day. Really cool. It's just a guy being pursued by this sort of mindless truck.
Yeah.
Well, mindless in the sense that you never, I think, get to see the driver.
I don't think.
And here is people being pursued by a mindless, mindless big fish.
Big shark, big boy.
And I've seen it quite a while ago, but it still really holds up. It's such an intense film. Of course, helped by the music that we really now were satirizing.
What I love most about Jaws is actually kind of an accident, is that they don't really show the monster that much.
For good reason.
For good reason, but basically it was because they had this huge mechanical shark named Bruce.
Oh, yeah, Bruce. They called him Bruce, yeah.
Yeah, good one for a film quiz.
Yeah.
Is that why in Finding Nemo, the shark is called Bruce?
Perhaps, yes.
I could imagine.
I'll do a confident yes to that. Yes, that's why. Bruce kept breaking down, was a big mechanical shark in the water. It's hard, you know. And, of course, Spielberg was really bummed, but he was like, I guess we'll just shoot all the other stuff first, and then we'll just do the shark bits when it's relevant. So kind of... almost accidentally, they did this thing where the suspense becomes way scarier than the shark itself, which I think is the way to do a creature feature. So the shark isn't really seen until much later, which is actually really effective because the suspense becomes a lot scarier than the actual shark itself.
Yeah, and then when you see it, it doesn't really matter that it doesn't look that great.
Well, the shark, I think it looks great because it looks like a shark because a shark looks fucking dead in the eyes anyway.
Fair.
I think a shark is probably the easiest creature to recreate because it's just a fish with two, like, round button eyes. It's kind of fine. Do you think Bruce looks shitty?
Are you aware of the fact that when you now go into the water somewhere, sharks would have heard this
They're
podcast.
They're unionizing against me.
Is that the girl that said that we look dead in the eyes?
They kind of, hey, challenge me. I will dead look, in the I will
Did
look
she
a shark
dead in the eyes?
Straight into its dead little
eyes. I remember that other
eyes.
Guy that said, like, we have dead eyes, like the doll's eyes. We fucking killed him in that movie, didn't we?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But no, I think the suspension of disbelief, I think that's the entire thing that what's happening here. Because of the fact that you don't see it for such a long time, when you see it, and this is very, it's... geniusly done because it could have been him like popping up when Roy Schneider turns around and throws the fish in and sees him for the first time. It could have been after, and that's after maybe 1 hour and 30 minutes in or something. You see it and then go like, that's it? It's that thing?
But you don't feel like, because this fucker's huge.
Yeah, no, what Spielberg does and what the Williams music does and what the acting does, and it's shot so fucking amazingly. It's like it builds so slowly and cautiously, like sort of structured towards this point that when you see it, it could have been a wacky waving inflatable arm flailing tube man coming out of the water. And you go like, that's fucking scary, man. It's just this sort of the suspension of disbelief is you're just put into that seat. Just like Roy Schneider's in that seat when the camera does the fucking vertigo zoom thing. You're like,
it's really cool.
It's geniusly done.
What I really like is that the shark is the monster, but it's also just a shark doing shark stuff. Like, it's literally just being a shark. And he doesn't really know, it's just a shark. But what the movie's technically about more, which again is the case with all monster movies, same as with zombies and vampires, which we've talked about before, it's always a representation of some other fear. And I think clearly in this movie, it's very much the monster is human hubris. It's mismanagement. It's people in authority not listening to warning signs that are very clearly warning you. And it's not really a shark. It's just a shark. Yeah. Right? Am I saying?
No, it's funny. Yeah, it's funny that you say that, like, people not listening. Like, there's so much bureaucratic talk in Jaws.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the entire beautiful conversation on the ferry that goes back and forth with the camera just being on the ferry. So the background changes, which is just this beautifully directed, specific shot. It's just a very long conversation with a mayor about how people shouldn't be on the... There's a shark coming...
People want to swim.
Yeah, we gotta make money. Yeah. Tourists coming in.
Classic.
And then people die.
Didn't it create a real hysteria of people being scared to swim?
To this day, people are scared of sharks for the wrong reasons. People are not these sort of people. No, people are killing machines. Sharks are not.
Yeah.
They don't generally sort of randomly hunt down people. That's not how their usual hunting behavior is.
Because do we want to get into what the definition of a creature feature kind is?
Well, I think it would be good for my scattershot mind if you...
Take the reins a little bit?
Take the reins on this and structure what really constitutes a creature feature.
Okay, let's fucking go. So... What makes a creature feature a creature feature? It's basically a subgenre of horror or science fiction based around non-human monsters. So animals, aliens, hybrids, or an identifiable thing like the Thing.
Wait, so I'll interject as a stupid child.
Go ahead.
So does this mean that Frankenstein then is not like a creature in the creature feature sense?
He kind of is. I didn't really include him in this because, why? I guess it does count as a creature feature, but I think that's more of an emotional story about, like, the creation of the monster.
Yeah, but I mean, if you say that there's a human aspect involved.
Yeah,
I mean,
it can be. Like, the fly is also a hybrid.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So I guess it's a very broad thing. What I like is that it often takes place in kind of an isolated setting. So, like, a boat or a ship or an Arctic research center or summer camp, or when we're talking about the really, really big boys, it's often a city.
The big boys.
The big boys.
Yeah. My big boy Godzilla.
The big boys. You've seen them. The King Kong's the big boy. Godzilla, the big boy. Mothman, the big boy. They're all big. So I have a little bit of a timeline because we kind of regard King Kong in 1933 as the first big feature. But in the silent film era, we had things like Gertie the Dinosaur in 1914. Aww. Have you seen this?
No.
It's really funny. It's like a 12-minute short film regarded as the first time that there was a huge monster that appeared on screen. And I was like, wow, I'm really keen to see this. So I watched it. Basically, what it is a bunch of dudes in a museum going like, have you heard that Frank can bring dinosaurs to life? And it's like, oh, and they're talking about line drawing cartoons. So basically he draws a dinosaur and the drawing comes to life and it's literally so cute, but it's so shitty. It's literally just one of those like 9-gag style meme drawings, just like a black line of a dinosaur going rah, and everybody goes, oh, the dinosaurs come to life in the drawing. So not at all scary, but a very cute first feature of a dinosaur on screen. But then in 1925, we get The Lost World, which has really cool stop-motion dinosaurs. I can't even imagine in that time how cool that must have looked. And then Phil Tippett was here last year at Lab 111, who's one of the stop-motion artists who worked on things like Jurassic Park. And he said that The Lost World was really fucking cool and a huge inspiration for him. Then King Kong in 1933 was a big blockbuster, basically, that combined the scary, scary creature with an actual story. But things really kicked off in the 1950s, where everyone was super scared of the atomic bomb. So basically everything went radioactive, from radioactive ants and them in 1954, but also giant spiders and lizards and ticks and insects. And they
ticks.
Ticks.
This is amazing.
Ticks.
That's so stupid.
Oh, it's so dumb. Funny. And they're all basically tied to atomic testing. And then at the same time in 1954, Japan gave us Godzilla, which was the first kaiju. And kaiju literally means strange beast. They are these massive monsters. They're often city destroyers. And Godzilla was a direct metaphor for nuclear devastation in post-war Japan. Kaiju films really grew into their own branch, and there's a ton of movies and other rival monsters like Mothra and Rodan. And of course, all of these eventually crossed over to Hollywood and gave us masterpieces like last year's Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, which is a piece of trash, but also the highest grossing Godzilla film of all time. And that makes me sad. But then again, in the 70s, Jaws really kicks things off with a slew of copycat films following suit, like Piranha, and like there's things in the water, scary, a lot of that. Then at the end of the 70s, we have Alien, and that fully kicks us off into the best era, in my humble opinion, because in the 80s, we get The Thing, The Fly, Gremlins, American Werewolf in London, Predator, just there's just so many in the 80s that are really worth a watch. 90s, we get a lot more camp, and it's also, sadly, the introduction of CGI. Absolutely, Jurassic Park, I'm going to leave you out of this. You have done nothing wrong. You are my baby forever. But we have things like Tremors, Lake Placid, Deep Blue Sea, Anaconda, and they're all super camp and basically all revolve around just an animal attacking. That brings us closer to our current day. In the 2000s, we had things like The Host by Bong Joon-ho in South Korea, and that was more about like environmentalism and, you know, government neglect and things like that. Post 9/11 media, again, Cloverfield in 2008 is one of those found footage, kind of like chaos-y ones that really reflect kind of the post 9/11 anxieties. And then more recently, we've done things like A Quiet Place, Godzilla Minus One, which is a kaiju, but really reimagined with emotional weight. And, you know, that's really amazing. And things like Nope, which is technically also an alien creature horror. Tom, do you love a creature feature? Are you a fan of the genre?
I mean, I am a child of the 80s and 90s. So I was brought up with Gremlins and Alien, and Aliens, mostly.
Mostly.
For the listeners, that is a quote from Aliens. So I really love Alien. I really love Aliens. Mm-hmm. I think that's an amazing film about, funnily enough, actually the entire Alien franchise really is about
motherhood.
Motherhood and pregnancy, the fear of pregnancy. Not that I'm so fearful of becoming pregnant, but I mean, I think the xenomorph designed by
H.R. Giger,
guy who he himself was a creature, a creature feature, or he has the features of a creature, whatever.
Rude.
Well, look him up. I mean, I think that entire, I wanted to say the entire franchise, but hell fucking no, the entire franchise is not amazing. But Scott's first film, which is this really small, almost small, confined thriller, and then Aliens, the best sequel name ever. It's not now. It was one. Now it's more. Is an amazing action movie and one of the best sequels ever made. Fincher's Alien 3 is just this botched project, which is maybe more interesting for it just being a very failed and cut up thing, and then spawning a career of a very important filmmaker. And then let's not get into everything.
Because we'll be here. We'll be here all day.
Gets past that. And I mean, yeah, I have very fond memories of Deep Blue Sea for some fucking reason. I mean, it's a terrible film, and I was a huge LL Cool J fan, but hell no, that you man were. Can't act.
I would love, because I've known you for a very long time, but not going back to the LL Cool J days.
Yeah, I mean, this is 1999. I'm 13 years old. I still have all the tickets from me and my 12 friends going to see that film, because I always took my friends I would treat them to go to a movie at cinema. And then I still remember where I saw this, in a cinema that doesn't exist anymore. Yeah, it's not a great film. And you said, like, this is the moment where CGI really comes in. By God, this is why you don't show the shark if you don't have the sort of chutzpah of actually, like, making it work.
Deep Blue Sea is so camp. It's the one where the sharks swim backwards, hey?
Do they?
Yeah,
I can't remember
it's
that.
It's the one where they're trying to find like a cure for Alzheimer's.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and then it's like, wait, we found out that when we do this and this to these sharks, they their brain expands and they can swim backwards and shit. Some amazing kills in that. I love a shark movie. I love an underwater movie. You know this, but me and my friend Barry, we all throughout lockdown every Wednesday,
we would get together
for Wetness Wednesdays, which is where we would curate a double bill each week of two underwater films. And they were 99% of the time creature features, but we did everything from like sharks, crocodiles, mermaids, kappas, based around the Mariana Trench. We even did a vapor one because we kind of ran out of like underwater vapor things. So we're like, what about the mist and the fog together? Because that's still wet. You really got to start expanding your horizons at some point.
Which one did you watch first?
We watched the mist. No, we watched the fog and then the mist. Jesus and that was Christ. Good because we would also always smoke a lot of weed during these. The mist is a fucking hoot and holler.
Yeah.
It really is. So I feel like maybe I've seen all underwater movies. I'm a bit
you
of an
really
expert.
You really submerged yourself into
I really submersed. Beautiful. So yeah, I love a creature feature, but I'm also, as you are, a child of the 80s, and I love The Fly and The Thing and Gremlins, mostly because of the practical effects that are so amazing and kind of the body horror crossover that happens, and at least The Fly and The Thing, you know, with skulls splitting open and Jeff Goldblum.
Breaking the arm of the guy who, oh my God. Oh. The Fly is such an amazing movie. It's funny because you said, I asked about how, what constitutes as a creature feature. And you said, yeah, but The Fly also has humanoid aspects. And I didn't want to interject you again because eventually, does he know? Is he not like
a fly? Well, it's a transformation movie. It's not like what creature features often are is like, la-li-da, we're living our lives and everything's chill. Oh God, monster. And this is a transformation, which is, I guess, a subgenre of a subgenre where it's a human slowly seeing themselves, finding themselves transforming into a shit-eating fly.
Yeah, so maybe it's more the fear of oneself than it's what you said about the creature, as with what we discussed with the zombie in the zombie episodes as well, or with the vampires. It's this sort of representation of a fear in humanity that haunts us. But here it's more in sort of introverted.
Yeah, I definitely include it, especially genre wise, with it fits in nicely with the others of the 80s. And then of course Gremlins, you know how much I love Gremlins. And the other day I was at my parents' house and my mom was like, we have so much shit upstairs, can we sort through some shit to get rid of, because you've been out of the house for 20 years. So I found this box of like drawings of Gremlins and Gizmos from when I was like 5, and two big garbage bags full of Mogwai's stuffed animals.
Aww.
Which is so cute. I was obsessed with Gremlins, and I think I saw it probably when I was too young, but that's just part of my DNA. I love that movie so much.
They're so kooky. I saw New Batch, the second one, on TV, I think a while ago, and I always thought that was a terrible film. I remembered it as not being a great film. And then when you kind of sort of zoom out of it and realize that Dante was just the only reason that he wanted to do was like, I want to do way more.
Dude, have you seen the Key and Peele sketch?
No.
There's a Key and Peele sketch, which is probably my favorite, where there's the writer's room and they're trying to write Gremlins 2. And then Jordan Peele comes in as like the script doctor. And he goes around the room and he goes, okay, you get to pick a gremlin. Okay, gremlin made out of electricity? Amazing. It's in the movie. Spider gremlin? It's in the movie. Lady hooker gremlin? It's in the movie. Nerdy gremlin with glasses? It's in the movie. And he just keeps listing them and the sketch just ends with, all of these are actually in the movie. And then someone recently asked Joe Dante about it. He's like, have you seen the sketch? And Joe Dante just goes, yeah, that's kind of exactly how that went.
It must have been, yeah. I've come to appreciate that there are movies that are just vibe movies, and that really constitutes as a vibe film.
Oh,
just
yeah, there's
like,
no narrative.
Look at what you're doing now on screen. Does it make any fucking sense? No? Do I care? Not really.
Is it cool? Oh.
Probably an obvious answer, but why is it that you guys at least seem to be more impressed or feel something more when it comes to practical effects rather than right. the digital CGI?
Yeah, I was
CGI
just thinking that, yeah.
I mean, that is something I am always very vocal about, and I feel like this is an affliction that not everyone has, but most CGI just doesn't impress me. I just don't feel the weight. You know, you can kind of almost always tell when something is CGI and not in the room. Like, even in the last, like, Jurassic World Rebirth, the dinosaurs are meant to be huge. And they're just like, yeah, but they're definitely not there. Mm-hmm. They move in a way where, I don't know, for me, it's also about the movie magic and the artistry. When you look at, so back in the day, Elliot, you
yeah,
had.
Yeah, I just want to ask you, like, as a teenager, how are you feeling about this?
I'll just finish my thought. And then I definitely do want to know if Elliot has this too. But like, what I love maybe just as much as watching a movie is watching the behind the scenes, especially for these kinds of movies where they did a ton of like practical effects. It's amazing to watch how they did it. And I think a lot of the magic is in that process for me, whereas like a behind the scenes of how they pulled a fucking dinosaur out of a computer is just not that interesting. So I think that's part of the movie magic for me. But do you feel this, like I am interested in like, as someone who isn't from the 80s, do you have the same like nostalgia for practical effects versus CGI, or is it just the same?
I wouldn't say necessarily nostalgia, but whenever I do watch a film from the 80s or 90s that's a creature feature, I'm almost a bit more impressed by it. Mm-hmm. And like, I think it's really hard to fake for an actor acting with something that's not actually there.
Yeah.
So like with CGI, I feel you can always feel there's something lacking or there's something missing. And then, but with a creature feature in the 80s or 90s, it's like you said, it's in the room. So they have something to react to. So
not only acting wise, but also cinematically, yeah, right? Like in the shot, you can really feel the lighting hitting it in a way. There's a goopiness to most like practical creatures that are kind of like jelly.
I also
and
think
kind of,
that like, movie making wise, as you said, I think you need to do way more work to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now with CGI, people just go like, okay, we filmed this, and then 200 other people can
now we're gonna decide what the monster looks like
exactly, yeah. And then we'll do it in post,
we'll fix it in post, yeah.
And that doesn't work when you're shooting with this sort of rubber animal or creature that you need to, you know, sort of light in
physically
a certain
pose
way
in the
and
space,
physically,
yeah.
And it does the tactility of it and the physical nature of it does change how you perceive a film, but it also just really, I think, changes how you make film, how you shoot. But I always wonder, is there going to be a movement towards, you see that there is people wanting to now bring back more practical effects.
Yeah.
You also see that mainly that is a marketing tool. So mainly now it has become this sort of thing where you say like, oh, we've done so many things practical here. I mean, I hate to say his name in this context because I think he's the most important guy selling cinema, but he's also lying his ass off about doing his own stunts. It's Tom Cruise.
Oh, okay. I was going to say Nolan, but...
Oh, well, okay, yeah. Fine. Yeah, sure. I think Tom Cruise and the entire Mission Impossible franchise has become this thing like, we're doing it all. Everything is real.
Yeah.
No, it's not, Tom. Like, half of what you're doing isn't real. Like, the entire thing in Maverick with the with the planes and shit like that, half of it is actually CGI. So the sort of talks about practical effects are like, they wanted to bring people in with that, but they're also not really doing that to an extent that maybe it would actually be something earth-shattering or like, wow, it does still cost too much money and is too much work and energy to actually do everything practical, I think.
I mean, because I was going to mention Nolan, because in the Odyssey that comes out in about a year, he has said that he's going to do the Cyclops in a cave and it's like a practical creature. And Nolan's also always shooting his own.
How is that a practical? How is it a practical feature? Is he gonna do stop motion? He's really gonna
do
the Harryhausen?
No, I think he's
gonna
do a huge animatronic, is what I think.
For this,
the cave.
Okay.
That was a whole big thing. But he's always tooting his own horn as like, I do everything practical and no CGI. And then there's a whole bunch of like people at CGI studios are like, hey, shut the fuck up. We did a ton of CGI on Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
Why are you always lying?
Yeah. But this is the thing. This has become a new thing in a specific sort of level in Hollywood of saying you do it practical. And of course they do a lot of shit practical. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh my God, you shot something on a beach, but then all the boats in Dunkirk aren't real, like, you know. So
I'm just excited to see more practical creatures again. I'm excited to see more practical gore is what I like,
taking our memories of creature features from the 80s and the 90s. You do, and that, because I want to compliment Hollywood on some things. Alien Romulus wasn't a great film.
Mm-hmm.
But it did do quite a number of things practically quite well.
Yes, I agree.
Apart from the fact that Ian Holm should have just been...
Oh, I forgot about that. I totally put that in a corner of my mind palace where I'd never find it. That was
you could
awful.
Have done practically, but that you did with a deep fake.
For the plot, it didn't have to be Ian Holm.
No, it could have just been
a guy.
No.
Can you explain?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So...
In the first film, well, actually, in all the Alien films, there's always an android, a synthetic, as they are called in the films, and they are these sort of white-blooded Data from Star Trek: Next Generation kind of
humanoid robots,
and as a sort of nod to the first film, for no real fucking reason, in Alien Romulus, they find a ship where half of his body is still there, and then he's this deep fake because Ian Holm, the actor, is dead, who plays Ash in the first film. And then they could have laughed at that, but then he becomes the sort of antagonist of the entire film, and you constantly see him being deep faked on this table, like,
and
doing...
such a bad deep fake. It was like in the very early days of being able to do this because the technology just moves so fast, but like, it looks awful. And it's like, why didn't we just get some guy to be the antagonist? Yeah. And because like all the synthetics have different exteriors, they look different. So it could just
And it again does the weird thing that a lot of the other things, Fede Alvarez really wanted to do practical effects for the Xenomorph and for, of course,
spaceships.
There are
a lot of
floating through space Xenomorph shit that's all CGI. But a lot of stuff is really tactile in that film, and it's
I love the way it looked.
Yeah.
Apart from that one, which, to be real, they only did that for like a BuzzFeed headline.
But there you go again,
like fan service.
It's the way of getting people into seats, and then you can just do the other things unpractically.
Unpractically.
So, what would you want to see in the future as a creature feature? Is there a creature that you would like to see on screen, like a big? Big ass birds of paradise killing people.
Well, I would just love seeing, as we just keep cranking out Jurassic Park / World movies, I feel like we should all make a pact that if we're going to do another one, do it in the way that they did it back in the 90s. I think that's something that like hurts my heart because that IP does mean a lot to me. And they've just fucked it up.
Yeah, but I mean...
So, the
situation with Jurassic World or Jurassic Park really makes me sad. I remember me and one of my best friends, we're both from almost the same age, and I think we saw Jurassic Park together quite a number of times. We're both big fans of the second one, Lost World, which is way better than people used to give it credit for.
Mm-hmm.
Now, because all the new ones are so incredibly shit,
even a mediocre
Spielberg sequel is still way better than the sort of rehashed bullshit that we're stuck with right now.
Because what's interesting about Jurassic Park is that they also used CGI for some of the wide shots, but it's used so sparingly combined with the practical shots that it still looks really great. On top of that, both Jurassic Park and Jurassic World were based on the Michael Crichton novels, so they had a story to speak of.
What are they based on now?
Just thoughts.
Regurgitation.
Regurgies.
But does it matter? In the end, we can separate quite clearly the original Jurassic Park from
That is true.
Like, we all know now anything that's being made is just a rehash for a money grab rather than...
Yeah, so okay, serious. So I'm going to change my answer and say not another Jurassic Park, but another cool monster that we've never seen before. And I think we're now again living through unprecedented events every single day. So maybe it's time for a new monster. And what would that look like? Like a giant orange hamburger, mutated, crushing blue cities.
Are you talking about Trump?
Yes.
No, I'm talking about who.
It sounded like you were talking about Donald Trump.
Yes, I was.
Okay.
Thank you. You're so perceptive.
The Hamburglar.
Hamburglar.
That actually does sound like something Hollywood would do. Like, so we need IP that's already there. Ronald McDonald. Like,
hey.
Huge ass Ronald McDonald terrorizing cities.
I mean, we're getting a Barney the dinosaur. I don't know, because I feel like Daniel Kaluuya was involved in that. I don't know. At some point after Barbie, Mattel was just like, all our IP. Take it all. Take it all. Take it all. So we're getting like Uno the movie. We're getting Polly Pocket the movie. We're getting...
Yeah. We're getting Uno the movie.
Yeah.
It's in the card game.
Yeah.
Yes. It's just four people around a table.
Are the cards like carrots?
It's a very like esoteric, yeah. slow burn cinema.
It's transcendental.
It's Aperture Pong with a set of cools Uno.
Just seeing one card being laid. And the suspense is all in which card are they going to put
down?
Card
says nothing.
Wow. Anyway, creature features. What untouched IP could we make a creature feature out of? Maybe all the Kellogg's mascots.
Yeah, I'm just constantly thinking of what is already being made. And it just makes me depressed. Yeah. I don't want to end on a depressed note, but I'm looking at my laptop now and I saw on my list Predator. I really liked Predator when it came out. Mm-hmm. Arnie movie, fantastic. But now Dan Trachtenberg is like pooping out these sort of new movies like Prey. And there's this new one where Elle Fanning is a robot. And the trailer, you know, could be worse.
Mm-hmm.
But... this is a bit of an issue with the creature features, as they have become this sort of easily regurgitated IP thing that Hollywood easily turns to, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Well, what is interesting is I think now what we're going to see is a lot more creature features that are based around humanoid AIs.
Mm.
Like if you're looking at Companion and things like that, I feel like there was another one that I watched the other day that also had this premise of like, it's a humanoid AI, turns out. So maybe that is now the big fear that obviously Mission Impossible is all about the entity, which is an AI. So I think maybe things that we're going to see in the next couple of years are going to be more about the fear of the AI again. And of course, we have an endless stream of shark movies being made, including the Sharknado, where... we're up to like the 10th Sharknado movie or something, and I say keep them coming.
So there are maybe a couple of really strange ones that we need to give some credit to.
Or absolutely.
Maybe they don't deserve credit. But
hey,
I just
but if you
want to
broaden your horizon, there's more than the anacondas of the
especially
world.
Because in the 60s and 70s, like a lot of stupid ones were created. One is one of my favorites. I do a film quiz, a big nationwide film quiz. A couple of years back, I did a When Animals Attack round. And so I was doing research for specifically very obscure ones where it's like weird creatures attacking. And one of my favorite ones was slugs. Yes, it's slugs attacking people.
Gross.
Really slow, slimy animals wreaking havoc upon people. Now, how do they do this? Because, please note, these slugs are not, like, big. It's not with this 70s movie called Food of the Gods, where it's, like, big rabbits. Yes, it's, like, huge rabbits attacking people. I mean, then you could imagine that if you're standing somewhere and there's this huge rabbit attacking you, like, yeah, that's going to be a problem. But with slugs, the slugs are just normal size. So what they did is it constantly becomes this sort of final destination thing, where my favorite scene in this film is a guy in his garden, And he picks up his glove, and there's a slug inside, and it bites him on his hand, and he's trying to get the glove off, but then he stumbles and throws over, like, a thing, and then the entire garden blows up, and it's like, it's constantly this sort of one thing trips, and then the other thing trips, and he cuts off his hand itself, and blah. It's so stupid. If you can find it out, as you said, maybe you need a lot of weed to watch this, but it's really... Then another one that I really always completely blew my mind is Roar. It's this movie where this is the creature feature where the creatures are actually real and with the actors. The best trivia thing about this film, because the entire plot of this movie makes no fucking sense. It was filmed in a house somewhere in Africa where a lot of people that are actually starring in the film lived, and they lived with lions, tigers, other wild cats. Favorite trivia of this movie is that while filming all the scenes, Dutch cinematographer Jan de Bont, that we know from directing Speed, for instance, and who used to work with Paul Verhoeven a lot, got mauled so badly. He got like scalped by a lion while recording this film, because they were just shooting and then other lions would be like all around them, but there's just wild cats. He got like scalped, so he had to be taken to a hospital, and he still has this sort of huge scar on his head from shooting with these animals. It's not a great film, but it's just it's this sort of nugget to see how stupid people in the 70s were to think that they could just shoot a movie with real animals. So maybe this is a reason why we do CGI, because if you do things too practically, you kill yourself.
You die.
You have another one.
I have a silly one, which is Underwater Love, which is a Japanese 2011 pink film, which is basically a softcore porn. It's a musical about a woman and a sea creature, a kappa, which is basically a turtle-like water sprite. And they end up fucking, which is really weird.
Wow.
So there's that also.
That sounds quite interesting, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Underwater Love.
Underwater Love.
From when is this?
2011.
Oh, that's okay. How are pink movies still being made?
Hey, who even knows? But it's really fun. It's a musical. There's really silly songs. Again, as a theme, I feel like it just requires a lot of smoking weed, which maybe we shouldn't promote too much on this podcast, but it's a huge part of the creature feature watching experience, I fear.
Shall we do one more shout out to the killer rabbit in Monty Python and the Holy Grail?
Yeah, we love that guy. He's unexpected.
There you go.
You can get tickets for Jaws' 50th anniversary at lab111.nl. We're also hosting a special celebrating cinema screening of Charlie's Angels on the 11th of September to coincide with our episode about chick flicks. You know where to find the tickets by now, right? This was a Lab 111 production, edited and produced by Elliot Bloom, with music from Hugo Emmertzall and artwork from Studio FFF.